We can start whenever you like, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let's begin. Welcome, everyone, to the April 9th, 2024 meeting of the Revenue Bond Oversight Committee. Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Member Camp. Camp absent. Member Leon.
Here.
Leon here. Member Boothie.
Present.
Boothie here. Member Visser.
Present.
Visser here. Chair Holliber.
Present.
Holliber present. Mr. Chair, there is a quorum.
Okay. Let's move on to general public comment. This is the opportunity to, for members of the public to speak on items within ARBOC jurisdiction and not on the agenda today. And if anyone on the Teams meeting would like to speak, please use the raised hand feature and the clerk will call on you.
We'll delay for a moment to see if we have anyone who has general public comment. And it appears that we have none.
Okay, we'll now move on to item number three.
Let's close public comment.
Public, okay, public comment is closed. We'll move to item number three, which is the audit update.
Members of ARBOC shall discuss the status of ongoing audits. This is a discussion and possible action item. It appears, Mr. Chair, that we have Hunter Wong, Tasha Dunn, and others on the call.
Hello.
I'll take it as my invitation to speak. Good morning, committee chair and committee members, Hunter Wong with CSA, and I'm here today with HKA and our Yano partners as well. Progress continues to be made on our audit, so we are still in progress in terms of selecting a sample for review. As of right now, we are conducting work related to essentially the risk assessment for these samples. So we are reviewing internal controls and other such matters at the PUC, and that'll help inform us as far as our risk assessment goes, so we know what samples to target essentially for our fieldwork testing. We continue to work with PUC, passing information back and forth and having meetings with them on a regular basis. Other than that, I don't think there's too much more of an update, but happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the committee?
Hi, Hunter. This is Jason. I think last month we discussed a target later on in the year for a release of a preliminary draft. Just curious, does that target still hold?
Yeah, so that's a great question, committee member. I think we are, so I believe last time we spoke, we had said that we were targeting summer for a draft issuance. At this time, because of the complexity of this phase's risk assessment, I don't believe that is the case. We're still working actively with PUC to get an understanding of their internal controls and complete this risk assessment for the sample. So previously we had anticipated getting a sample selected probably by this meeting, we would have it selected. That is not the case right now. There's still some work to be done with PUC for us to be able to come together for that sample.
Okay, thanks. So when is the new target for the draft?
It is because of how we select a sample to complete this risk assessment, we essentially need to do our due diligence over the entire matter. It's difficult to say right now when we would complete the risk assessment because there are some complexities, and it's also hard to discuss the exact details because we can't discuss the details of our draft work right now under the governing statute for CSA. But essentially, because of the complexity of this third phase, the complexity of the risk assessment for this third phase, it's difficult to put a really strong target on it. I would say that if we were to move the draft target to somewhere probably in August, that might be my best guess right now. And I think HK and Yano, if you have any better clue, we can talk about it there. But this takes time because we have to work with PUC to complete the risk assessment, to get all the information we need to complete the risk assessment. And so, it's subject to a lot of moving parts. But it's difficult to say because we don't know what we don't know right now.
Hunter, the only thing I would add is that we're still dealing with the getting answers to questions and reviewing that information. And unfortunately, this is not the only thing on everyone's plate at the current time. So we have competing things with both CSA and PUC. So again, it's just a process, and unfortunately all the different objectives and information just takes time to get through.
So this is my, to the committee members here, so this is my first time through this, so I haven't been through this before. So is this a normal thing where the target slips from summertime to August? Should we be concerned if we come here next month and it slips more, or?
I'll be happy to answer that. The first cycle took us through 4 months into the year before the draft was issued, and then it was finalized probably 6 months later than the end of the year. The second cycle, we issued the draft in December, and Hunter, I don't remember the exact finalization date, but I want to say it was in the spring. So we're trying to avoid that prolonged duration based on the prior two audits.
What we can do, committee members, is if there's an interest in understanding the exact details of what we're conducting right now and what we're going through, it may be an option for the RBOC to appoint a representative. And I don't remember all the kind of the legal issues that prevent us from talking about this kind of in an open setting. But I believe what we can do is if RBOC appoints a representative that would like to meet with us in PUC, we're happy to discuss that in that meeting there. But I also do want to defer to the city attorney to make sure that we're not violating any Brown Act or anything like that, anything about public meetings.
I think as long as we are properly noticing the meetings and we are diligent about maintaining quorum or not, then we will be in compliance with the Brown Act. I think anything that should be discussed publicly should happen in the context of a public meeting. We need to have confidential attorney-client privilege or other conversations. We can navigate that outside of a public meeting.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I think your predecessor, Mark Blake, had helped us kind of come to, like, not a subcommittee, but had helped us come to like a come up with a proposed option for doing that confidential information transmission. Because right now, because we're still in our draft, all of our work is still considered confidential.
I think that makes sense. As this is just working product right now and confidential, it makes sense to work on that with a limited number of RBOC members first, so we can maintain both holder's office confidentiality and attorney-client privilege. And then when the information is final or near final, present that in a public meeting setting. I think that aligns with probably what Mark noted before.
I believe so too.
Yeah, I think we did something similar previously where one member, I think it was Member Camp, was did, but I think that was sort of at the end stage after the draft report was finished, but before it was published and presented to the RBOC committee. But I don't think I don't recall having a member involved at this stage in the process.
That is correct, Commissioner.
Any of us here would be in any position to tell you how to do your jobs on a day-to-day micromanaging type basis, right? That's not our goal. You know how to do your job better than we know how to do your job. I guess my only, as a new member to this committee, I guess my only observation is this is my third meeting, and we've noted that I don't know, John, if we want to make a note for this in the minutes, that the draft has slipped from summer to August. Like next month, if it slips some more, I think we should do something about it, right? Or maybe we should take a look at why it keeps on slipping, but hopefully it doesn't slip more, right? But I think we should take a note, at least, that we found here that the target has slipped from summer to August. Go ahead.
Just saying, we're happy to be transparent about it. Just we need to work within our governing language and making sure that nothing is discussed publicly, but we're happy to be transparent with it if any RBOC members are interested in discussing with us.
Yeah, thank you.
For you, it is more painful on your outside auditors than it is on the participants, because extending this does not make our life any easier. So we are painfully aware of the implications, and I would be more than willing to accelerate, but having been through this twice before, it's a process that just takes time to get through the various city and utility organizational people.
Yeah, and I think in the past there were delays involving, you know, finding documents. Not everything had been digitized. There was a previous, financial system that the city had used, and not all of the files were able to migrate well into the new system. So it's not unusual. I mean, these are large, complex capital projects. As mentioned, there's kind of competing priorities that staff has. they can't drop everything to work on this audit. But it sounds like the team has been working on it, and they are committed to getting this done in a reasonable time frame.
Yeah. You've hit on the main issues that this audit is over a long time period, and those issues pervade all of the activities and the analytical work that we're doing. So you spot on with it in terms of the system changes and other information, and trying to get back through this in a dozen years of activity in some of these bond series, some even longer.
Okay, are there any other questions from the committee? Okay, seeing none, let's move on to public comment. If any members of the public would like to speak, please use the raised hand feature and we'll call on you.
We'll delay for a moment to see if we have any callers on the system remotely who want to speak on this agenda item number 3. By show of hands, it appears we have no speakers, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so public comment on this item is now closed. And barring any final comments from the committee, we will have this on the next agenda for a further update, and no action will be taken at this time. Okay, let's now move on to item 4, the Water Capital Programs Update.
Members of RBOC will receive an update on the Water Enterprises 10-Year Capital Improvement Program, including project highlights. This is a discussion item, and we'll be taking public comments as part of the discussion.
And we have with us Katie Miller, the Director of Water Capital Programs here.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
I feel like you could sit over here.
Should I?
Yeah. I think.
Or we can pull, or both. We can
pull both.
Oh, do you want...
Is it not sharing? Please do.
Let's see if we can set that up.
Thank you, everyone, for your patience while we deal with the technical difficulties of this meeting space. Yeah, you probably want to put a slideshow mode.
From beginning, there we go. Great. All right, we'll try again. So thank you so much for having me this morning. Good morning, committee members and Chair Holifer. It's really nice to be here today. I'm Katie Miller, and I'm the Director of Water Capital Programs for the SFPUC. And today I will share an overview of our water capital programs. So I'm going to start off telling you about our capital planning process. This year we especially performed a lot of extra work to make sure that our capital program was right-sized but also affordable and that we were able to deliver it. And we spent a lot of extra time on our processes and procedures to improve them and try and make sure that we're doing everything as efficiently and effectively as possible. So as you know, the 10-year capital improvement plan is a 10 years of planned appropriations that is approved by our commission and then on through the city process, but only the first 2 years of appropriations are actually approved as part of our budget process. And I'm going to go pretty quickly through these slides. They are available to you as a handout or as an attachment to the meeting, so you can always go back and look at them. The basis of for the water, all the water capital projects is the levels of service goals. And these are very important fundamental quantitative goals that help drive the performance criteria for all of our projects. It also helps us control costs and make sure that we're doing the best work possible for the system. These were first developed as part of the Water System Improvement Program in the early 2000s. And then were first approved by our commission in 2008 as part of the programmatic environmental impact report for the Water System Improvement Program. Since then, the Water Enterprise has worked on amending these and expanding them. The basic LOS that we used for WSIP for the Water System Improvement Program are the same, but a lot of detail and very specific goals have been added. This was brought to our commission in December of 2023 as expanded, and they were approved by our commission. So we try to live by those as our foundation of our programs. For our capital plan, we focused on three underlying principles, which was financial sustainability, the ability to deliver these projects, which is a function of resources and contracting capability, and then priority, making sure that we were doing the most important projects for the system and to meet our goals. This year's capital plan is the most ambitious that we've ever taken on, resulting in an $11.8 billion 10-year plan. It's important to highlight that this is going to stimulate the economy, create thousands of jobs, and also that our projects are very much focused on addressing climate change, seismic resilience, fire safety. And so we know that this is ambitious, but we also know that it's what needs to happen. And so we're looking forward to taking this on. Again, the three pillars of affordability, making sure that our rates can repay the bonds that we take out, and that that's affordable for our customers. Making sure that our programs and projects are in line with best management practices and are efficient and cost-effective. And finally, making sure we do the projects that are the right projects for meeting our goals. This shows our capital plan, the SFPUC's capital plan over time. As you can see, wastewater in the green bars is the major part of the capital plan. Water has been pretty steady at about $150 million a year but it's increasing, and can't see the last bar there, but a portion of the water capital plan is the power program, and that's shown in orange as Hetch Hetchy Water and Power. About half of that funding goes to the hydroelectric facilities that are up in the Moccasin and High Country area, and those are captured, improvements to those are captured under the Water Enterprise program. So now I'll share with you a little detail about the water programs. So we divide our capital improvements into three different programs. The first is the Hetch Hetchy Water Capital Improvement Program, and again, this represents about half of the total investment for power. Within this program, there's about 17 major projects and a whole bunch of smaller repair and rehabilitation or R&R projects that represent about 20% of the budget. These are funded by a combination of revenue and bonds, both from the water sector, but also from the power sector. And each of our assets has been classified as serving water only, serving power only or serving a combination of water and power. For example, the San Joaquin pipelines, which is downstream of all the hydroelectric facilities, serves water only and is paid for 100% by water customers, consisting of wholesale and retail customers. The projects that, like the Moxon Powerhouse or the Home Powerhouse that only serve power, are paid 100% by power revenue bonds, as well as, revenue and bonds. And then the ones that are serve both water and power are 55% funded by power and 45% by water. And that is something that was negotiated with our wholesale customers and is in their water supply agreement. So that's fixed for now. It's always something that can be renegotiated, but that's where we stand now. The Water Enterprise Capital Improvement Program represents all the facilities kind of in the East Bay from about Tesla Portal or the town of Livermore west through the South Bay and up to San Francisco. And that's but just almost to San Francisco city limit. Those are projects that are funded by both our regional wholesale customers and our San Francisco customers, our retail customers. And I don't have the slide in here about our wholesale water customers, but hopefully you're familiar. We have 27 wholesale customers representing two-thirds of the water that we serve. So it's a much more expansive system than, say, our wastewater, which is just here in the city and county of San Francisco. This makes the funding more tricky because we have to really track for each and every project where the funding sources are coming from and make sure that we're billing that correctly. Within the local program, this is just San Francisco. We have 13 major projects, and that's funded 100% by San Francisco retail ratepayers through both revenue and bonds. More of the San Francisco projects are revenue funded, but still probably 80% is through bond funding. Then finally, our third program is the Water System Improvement Program that you have probably heard of. It was initiated in 2005. All the funding has already been appropriated, so you won't see it in our capital plan because that money's already here. The local program was completed in 2020. We are down to only two projects remaining in the regional system, representing about $80 million. And these are water supply projects that are just taking a little bit longer to complete. So it's a tail, it's got a long tail. But we're continuing to keep it in the Water System Improvement Program structure, since that's what our BOSCA agency is used to seeing, and there are certain regulatory requirements around that program. So we're gonna maintain it in that in this format. And I wanted to share that we, due to the size of our program, we are actively seeking external sources of funding. We've been very successful, as you are probably aware, with the wastewater program. I think we've secured $1 billion in funding. On the water side, we have two projects that have already received funding, and that's the Mountain Tunnel Improvement Project, $238 million project up in the HETCHI program, and the Westside Enhanced Recycle Water Project here in the city. We're applying for two more major projects, which is the Sunol Water Treatment Plant Ozone Project, as well as the Lead Component Service Program, which is here in the city. This represents, for the two projects approved, it represents about $200 million in savings to our customers. The ones that we're applying for is probably about another $150 million in savings. So these are really great programs that are worth going after. We are actively applying for a new program called the CORPS Water Infrastructure Financing Program, or SWIFP. It's the Army Corps of Engineers. It's a brand new program to help water agencies rehabilitate their dams. We have 18 dams within the system that are regulated by Division of Dam Safety. Six of them are right here in the city, our major reservoirs. The bearing wall is high enough to qualify as a dam, and so it's regulated. So this funding is, we've applied for what we think is $500 million to $1 billion worth of projects in the future, and we're waiting for our pre-application. We should know by the end of this month, but it's looking very promising.
Are those loans as well, the $500 million?
Yes, those are low-interest loans as well.
Okay.
But again, it's saving us 30% approximately on our funding.
So all in all, about 800, I'm looking like $300 million in the top, $500 million in the bottom.
Yeah, and we're looking at other ways that we can bundle projects for like our pipeline projects in the future. Mm-hmm. But this is a pretty sure thing. This corpse packaging is just starting up, and we're in the ground floor, so we feel like we have a good shot at this.
And those are projects that otherwise would be likely revenue bond funded, and
absolutely
is able to.
And they still will be revenue bond funded and then reimbursed through this program.
Correct.
Oh yes, speak to this.
So the value of these programs is that, particularly for the WIFIA program and the Army Corps program, is essentially built off of the WIFIA program. Is that these programs allow us to lock in financing in advance of actually drawing the funds, and this allows us to let contracts even without having drawn down funds. But more importantly, it allows us to set rates in advance. So for example, in January, we were able to draw down more than $800 million of WIFIA funds with an average life of over 30 years at a rate of 145. So not something we could replicate in the commercial market. So it's part of our overall strategy to minimize the impact on ratepayers of all of our borrowing.
1.5 is a great rate. I mean, given that currently, like, 3-month T-bills are, about 5.5? So for these additional $800 million, is that locking in now, or is that locking in at 1.5?
So what would happen is there's an application process.
Uh-huh.
Once we enter into the loan, we could set the rate. What is also remarkable about the WIFIA program, again, not something we could replicate in the private markets, is that WIFIA will allow us to renegotiate the rate once, as long as we haven't drawn down the funds. So it's an incredible option for us.
Right.
And so it's part of how we manage our overall borrowing. But the real key is that under the rules with the controller's office, we need to be able to demonstrate we have funds available to release for projects in order to let contracts.
I see.
And so,
But I guess my question is, understood. My question is, 18 months ago, the interest rate environment was very different than mm-hmm. what it is now. That 1.5% is great. That's an awesome rate. But now, I don't know what the going rate in this market is. But if, I'm just wondering, do we expect to be paying more than 1.5 for these loans?
It's a fixed rate. So we fix when
right.
we enter into.
Oh, so you're saying all of these are 1.5?
No. The first two WIFIA loans that we entered were at a 1.45%.
The 238 and the 214.
Those are the state revolving funds.
Yeah, these here you're looking at are water projects.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I'm referring to is our wastewater.
Let's make sure we're speaking into the into the microphone and not at each other.
Right. So these are potential future loans.
Okay. My question is about these.
Okay.
On the presentation.
So we haven't set these rates and
okay.
those. When we enter into the WIFIA loans, it'll be based on the Treasury, based on the average life, and then we will decide whether that is the most efficient way to borrow. We use our commercial paper program, we use our bonds, we use our loans. But so what we've done with the wastewater is we didn't immediately use those loans, but we waited until now we're
so,
able to
so
draw.
Let me play this back. We should have it right. So what you're saying is the $800 million in loans on the screen right now, the interest rate attached to that is unknown, correct?
It will be set in the future.
Okay, so we
it'll be based on the Treasury rate, which is a taxable rate, which we can also borrow tax exempt, but it's based on the Treasury rate, which is a very high credit rating. So it's that combination. But yes,
we don't know.
I believe, though, the state revolving fund loans are locked in for Mountain Tunnel and recycled water. We're already getting reimbursements for recycled water.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The $500 million, that's huge. Do we know the rates, or out of curiosity?
They're both separate loans, so I don't know if they have. So we could probably get back to you with the rate.
Yeah.
With the rate. Is that something you could follow up on?
But that's the dynamic. And the SRF loans are based on one half. The state's borrowing rate.
Sure. Thank you for explaining that. Yeah. My question is mostly about the rate, but thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. That was interesting for me as well. Okay, now I'll get into the specific programs and give you a little details about each one of them. So the first is the Hetch Hetchy Capital Improvement Program. And this slide shows the town of Moccasin. I don't know if you guys have been through there on your way to Yosemite, but you can see the Moccasin penstock marching up the hill, and that carries 100% of the Hetch Hetchy water, which then flows into the building you see on the right is the old Moccasin powerhouse. That's no longer used. There's a newer powerhouse to the right of that that's already 60 years old. It's a very scenic place, and we invite you to – hopefully you get to go there on the tour and get to know that. We have 17 projects worth about $1.5 billion in our upcoming capital program. The current set of projects represents about $1 billion. There's one water project, which is a rather large one for valve replacement on the San Joaquin pipelines. There are 5 projects within the power funding only, and 11 projects that are which is most of the program that really support the water and the power system. Of the $971 million in these 17 projects, we've expended about 30% of that. And as you can see from the phases on the left, only about a third are still in the planning and design phases, with two-thirds of these projects in construction. So the Hetchy program is mature. Most of the projects are going into construction now. We have some big long-term projects on the horizon that are still to come, mostly we're in full construction. This shows where the projects are located throughout the Hetchy system. You can see it's all in the eastern, represents about 100 miles, many remote areas that are difficult to get to for construction projects. And so I'll just talk about a couple of them. Our O'Shaughnessy Dam that holds back Hetch Hetchy Reservoir is 100 years old. The dam is in good condition, meets all our seismic criteria as well as flood control, but the appurtenances within the dam are old and need replacing. So this project is to replace and upgrade valves and different appurtenances within the dam. There are 2 projects representing about $150 million. One of them has 5 sub-projects. 2 of them are already in construction. This slide shows one of our construction projects over the winter. This was in January of this year, and this is lowering a valve down 200 feet into this diversion tunnel, which is down at the base of the dam. This carries all of the Hetch Hetchy water out of the dam and into the water system. These valves are old and failing, and so this is a huge, important replacement project. This allows us to discharge water directly to the Tuolumne River, which is also really important for meeting our environmental goals and requirements. Next project is what used to be our largest project in the Hetchy program, which is the Mountain Tunnel Improvements Project, and which again has the SRF loan funding. It's an 18-mile long tunnel, again, 100 years old, and we're repairing within the tunnel. We're doing tunnel repairs, and we're adding a new flow control facility at the western end of the tunnel when the water flows into Priest Reservoir. And we're also doing roadway and access improvements. This project was in planning for, about 8 years. It requires 5 shutdowns over the winters during construction. So took a lot of coordinated planning to figure out how to do this, how to shut off this the entire Hetch Hetchy water supply so we could get inside the tunnel and make these critical repairs. We just completed the third shutdown of the entire Hetch Hetchy system. During that time, all of our water was supplied by our Bay Area regional reservoirs through our water treatment plants. They had never done 100 days long shutdown before, so this was a significant accomplishment. We were in emergency response protocol the entire time, and we made it through, and you are now drinking Hetch Hetchy water again through our partially repaired tunnel. But we're very proud of that, and because of these repairs, we will be able to have these 100-day shutdowns in the future. This just shows some of the work. This was done round the clock, 12-hour shifts a day. The workers broke out the some of the lining where there was defects and found these incredible voids behind the lining into the mountain. They brought grout in and 1-inch lines. Some of these grout lines would travel 2 miles into the tunnel, so they had to keep it super liquidy. And then they had to pour the grout back into these voids in lifts so that this liquidy stuff had time to dry. So really, really painstaking work, cold, wet conditions. Very, very proud of all our crews. We had our own staff in there inspecting everything, so it was a significant amount of work that was performed. We also built a new flow control facility shaft. This is a 300-foot deep shaft that's at Priest Reservoir. You can see in the background behind that a little bit of water in the reservoir. It's mostly drained, but that is also the Hetch Hetchy water making its way to the city. The shaft allowed us to put new valves down there so we can control the flow. Before it was just gravity flow, and whatever came down the system we had to, you know, serve, and so it was harder to control the flow, and this will give us a lot better control. On the right side is the Priest Adit. This is a new access tunnel that goes 200 feet deep into the mountain that allows our workers to bring vehicles in to do maintenance into the future.
Elementary question. This is fascinating. Like, if you don't have a valve and the control is purely based on gravity feed, then what's the drawback?
You can only take what the hydraulic grade line of the system will allow. So it means that we can't really control the power generation at the downstream power generation facility. What we do use is we use the regulating reservoirs to control it, but there's just a limited amount of how we can.
And if you're
that.
Producing too much power, there's no way to store that extra power, or I understand.
Yeah.
Or regulate it over time.
Yeah, and having this control actually benefits. This is paid for 50% by our power. Mm-hmm. Having this control will allow us to time, you know, really generate power during the peak hours when the state needs more power, and then back off on the power generation, which also means backing off on the water. At night when people aren't drinking water and nobody's using power, and so have a more of a diurnal flux to the system, which will increase the revenues, but also will meet all of our goals and needs.
Thanks.
So pretty cool. Okay, this is now our largest project in the Hetch Hetchy program. This is, you can see the forecasted and what was approved in our budget is $331 million. These are the penstocks that you see marching down the hill at Moccasin. These are 100 years old as well. We are hoping we could rehabilitate them for about $50 million, but there's enough defects that we're concerned about failure there. 100% of the water flows through these, so we're going to do a full replacement project to the tune of about $300 million. We're currently in the early planning. We're looking at a tunnel versus a pipeline and just trying to evaluate all the alternatives for the most cost-effective project. And down below the penstocks, you can see the Moccasin powerhouse, and the water comes into the powerhouse and spins two turbines to generate power. And that brings us to our next project, which is the powerhouse rehabilitation project. And we're about 50% through this project. We have rehabilitating the generators. I'm just going to decrease the size of this right here. So you can see the new generator that we built. General Electric is our contractor on this. This is a rebuilt rotor that is going to be lifted in the crane and dropped into the powerhouse. This is supposed to be done every 25 years, and it's been about 40 years on this. So we're really at the bare edge of reliability. This will, again, make the power generation more efficient, but also just 100% of the water flows through these generators, so it's really important to have this reliability. The costs of the project went up, you can see, significantly by about $30 million. This is the third project that will be coming up in a couple of years for a system upgrade of all the rest of the systems. And when you go in there, there's just wires everywhere. It's just fascinating. But this will give us a full upgrade that will last us another 30 years for reliability.
Okay. Out of curiosity, what did the project cost go up?
Yes, good question. What we thought the system upgrade would be relatively simple, but through these first two projects of replacing the transformers and then the generators, we realized it's much more complex and there was a lot more equipment that needed to be replaced than what we first anticipated. Some of our construction management costs went up by about $7 million to provide specialized inspection services for the first two projects during construction. And it's well worth it because when you're doing these electrical, as you know, being an electrical engineer, these electrical projects are complex. And so having that extra quality control, quality assurance has more than paid for itself and bringing the project in on schedule. Third project, we've just realized it's a much bigger project than what we originally anticipated. But we've now budgeted for that. It was approved in our budget, and so we'll move forward with that bigger project.
Does the issues with GE Power Systems and its spin out into Verona, does that impact pricing at all, or were that out of scope for this discussion?
Yeah, I think it's out of scope. Yeah. I will say that we really struggled. I said on time delivery, but the generator replacement actually is 1 year behind schedule, and that is because due to the pandemic, GE just had the hardest time sourcing materials. It's interesting. GE sourced materials from I think 17 different countries. They had stuff coming from Poland and Italy and, you know, Korea, and with the supply chain issues from the pandemic, they really, really struggled, but they've held their pricing. We've allowed them to go an extra year for the same price, and now they're doing super high quality work. So it was worth it to have that extra year to get it right.
Good. GE really got hammered in the pandemic. The power systems unit, yeah.
Yeah, good to hear about. we didn't know that. I'm sure some of my colleagues in the power area know that. The last project I'll talk about up here is our San Joaquin Pipelines project. This is a 100% water project. This is broken into four construction projects. We are replacing valves and adding valves to the system to make it safe for workers to get inside these large diameter pipelines and perform inspections and repairs. We only had single valves. But to safely work in a pipeline, Cal OSHA and, you know, us too, would like to have double valves. So if one valve fails, you're not inundating, engulfing somebody, which has happened before. So this is adding the second valve or making sure that everything's rated so that we can put workers in the pipe. We have the two projects are in construction, as you can see, and then the second two, one of them is already awarded. And the other one is going out to bid this spring. So we will have all four projects in construction next year. Okay, now I'll shift gears and talk about our regional and local projects. There we go. So our regional program, which is really the Outer Bay Area, kind of our wholesale customers area, we have 25 projects for about $1.5 billion. You can see that the bulk of these are water treatment, pipelines, and then down at the bottom, the buildings and grounds projects. So we are heavily focused on infrastructure improvements, but you'll see in the buildings and grounds, we are also rebuilding the offices and facilities for our workers, because these are all about 50 years old. Of these projects, we're a little bit less mature than the HETCHI program. We have about two-thirds that are still in planning, design, and bid and award, or about half our projects, and the other half are in construction or in multiple phases. So it's coming behind the HETI program, but most of these projects will be in construction in the next 2 to 4 years. And this just shows the, again, that, you know, the phase of the project will go on. These are scattered throughout the Bay Area leading up to San Francisco. You can see we have about an equal amount of projects on the East Bay as we do on the peninsula. You can see from this graph there on the East Bay, there are two major reservoirs, Calaveras Reservoir and San Antonio, where we've got dams projects in those areas. There's a water treatment plant, the Sonoma Valley Water Treatment Plant, that has about 4 projects coming up to rehabilitate that treatment plant. It treats all of the water from those two reservoirs. It's also capable of treating the Hetch Hetchy water. And then on the peninsula, we have 2 reservoirs, the Crystal Springs and Colorcitos reservoirs that also have dams. Oh, I'm sorry, and 3, the San Andreas. All 3 of those have dams projects. Those are in our application for the SWIFT-P financing, and then a whole bunch of pipeline projects. So this is one of our big ones, the Sonoma Valley Water Treatment Plant Ozone Project. This is we are just about to award this. We have open bids and are about to award it. And this will start construction next year. And we have regional dams projects, as I mentioned, there are 3 of them. You can see the costs on these are very low right now. This is really just funding planning work, but we now are far enough along on Pilarcitos Dam. We know that that's gonna be a $60 million project, and we've requested, I think, $66 million in our next budget cycle. The other 2, we are holding at this lower planning only level until we have more. It takes about 4 to 5 years to really get all the geotechnical and information to know what the project needs to be. But these will go up in cost, and we put that into our application for the funding. We have not yet put those costs into our budget. We see them in kind of in the next 10 years cycle. This is one of our building projects. We've completed work on the Sonol Yard, and we are almost done with our Alameda Creek Watershed Center. This should be open either this fall or early next year. It will be a community center that can provide classes and lots of educations for local schools and that type of thing. And this project is almost completed. And finally, the biggest one in this program is the Millbrae Yard campus improvements. I don't know if you've been down to Millbrae, but that's where all of our operations staff are located. Most of them are located. Some of them are out in Sonol. This, you can see the airport behind here. That's approximately where this yard is located on El Camino Real. This was first built in the 1950s. We will rehabilitate that main admin building. But we're so big, we've had to move a lot of our water quality and watershed staff to offices in Burlingame. We will relocate those back to this campus. We're going to build a new building kind of on the northern perimeter of this property and relocate all our staff onto one campus. And that will free up, we call it the Rollins Road building, that will free that up. We'll be able to, we own the building, we'll be able to sell it. So that should bring in a revenue of approximately $50 million, something like that. Don't quote me on that, because that'll be about 8 years in the future. But helps fund this very expensive but very important project. Okay, and now I'll talk about a little bit about our local program. Our local program is really driven by main replacements. There are 1,200 miles of pipe right here within San Francisco, which is pretty incredible. There's pipes in every single street, as you know from the sewers too. So these replacing the pipes is it represents about $1 billion of the local program. There's a few other projects. We have some water supply projects and things on other facilities. But the other big one is our buildings and grounds. You can see $394 million. We are also rebuilding a new campus for our employees in the city distribution division. And then also some of our water money goes to augment the emergency firefighting water system. And I just want to clarify that that is my understanding from our city attorney that is we're allowed to do that under Prop 214, I think, because it is part of our water system. It's the firefighting part of our water system, but it's still serving the same customers. most of that money is funded through ESER bonds, which are administered by the Office of Resilience, the Capital Planning, and General Fund Obligation Bonds. But our water revenue bonds also funds a portion of that, where the pipelines are both potable and firefighting. So if they're serving both purposes, then we contribute equally to those. So you can see that most of the projects in the local system are multi-phases because they're just cookie cutter. We just keep designing them and getting them out. We do probably 14 contracts a year of the main replacement and just keep it going. So here's, again, main replacement. I've talked a little bit about this, but we're trying to replace approximately 15 miles a year. We've got projects on 19th Avenue, El Terraval, Castro, Diamond, Geary. We partner with the other city agencies, both for try to get, you know, sewer first and foremost, since we're together, but also for street improvements, MTA improvements. Try and get it all done at once. It makes it a lot more complicated when we do that, but at least we're only tearing up the street one time.
The previous pie chart, this is like what, you know, 2/3 multi-phase, maybe 3/5, right, and the rest design and construction.
Yeah.
So does multi-phase mean it's already designed and you just keep on constructing because it's already designed, or what is multi-phase?
No, it means some of the, it's a bunch of multiple contracts,
okay,
that are somewhere in the process of planning, design, or construction. So as soon as we get one out of planning, it moves to design, and that planning group starts the next one. And the designers design on this one and then get it into construction, and then the designers go on to the next one.
Okay.
So the designers are working on probably 4 contracts at any time. The planners are trying to spit out new projects for them to be working on. And the construction team then, as they move into construction, they're overseeing construction on, you know, 8 contracts at a time, something like that.
Okay.
So it just keeps moving through, and we try and keep, you know, 6 to 14 contracts going at any time.
Oh, okay. So multi-phase is like there's micro design and construction phases built in.
That's correct. Correct. There's multiple contracts that each have their design and construction phase. This is a new program as of about a year ago. This is another one that we're applying for SRF funding. There's a mandate to identify and replace all water service lines that may have lead components. We had about 1,300 services that are galvanized steel or unknown, where we weren't quite sure what the components were. And so we're digging up each and every one of those, making sure that they don't have lead. Some of them did have lead, but we're replacing them all with copper. And you can see we're about halfway through this already. The program was just started about a year ago, and they are just going for it. Our plumbers, and we have a contractor following behind to do the restoration. And we're making really, really great progress with this. And I think there's more about this on our website if you want more information. And this is the second, you know, the biggest project is the main replacement, but this is the second biggest project for the local retail system. This is to build a new headquarters. We actually did a land exchange for property at 2000 Marin, which is the old Chronicle printing press site. It's at Cesar Chavez and Evans. And we're now, we have a design, we have a construction contractor on board. We are at about 100% design. We'll be coming up this summer, and we hope to break ground in the fall to at least start the demo of the previous buildings. And I believe we're, for the public art, I believe we selected an artist, so you'll probably be seeing that unveiled soon. But that will be, there's a garage on the corner of Cesar Chavez and Evans that will have a beautiful art mural on both sides of it. Be a nice enhancement. And this is, I worked at that city distribution division yard for 7 years, and it's dangerous. And it's not only outdated, but not a safe place to work. So this will be a welcome improvement for our workers. Okay, and then real quickly, we're at the tail end of our water system improvement program. You can see we're 99% complete with only $74 million remaining in the program. But because of the regulatory requirements, we're keeping it intact as a program. We have two projects remaining. They're both water supply. The first is the Water Alameda Creek Recapture Project. This is an interesting project. We actually got into 2 years into construction, and we were having such significant challenges with change orders and also erosion of the bank. Once we drew down the quarry water level, erosion that we had seen before but hadn't, you know, in 2017 we saw erosion, but then we awarded this contract in 2020. When they drew down the banks again to do the work, the erosion had gotten much worse. So we were worried that we're investing in, and what this project is floating barges with a giant pump station in the middle of this, and it recaptures water that we release from Calaveras Dam to meet our fisheries requirements. So all this water gets released into the Alameda Creek. Alameda Creek mostly goes subsurface in this one area of Sinole Valley, and a lot of the water subsurface flows into these quarry ponds that are there by the quarry operators. They're manufactured, and so this seemed like a perfect opportunity. We own this property. There's a quarry operator leasing this that we could use this as a permanent water supply, where we now take the water back and either move it up to San Antonio Reservoir or treat it at the water treatment plant. We have all the permits in place. We had the environmental impact report approved in 2020, and then went on to issue our construction contract. We hit some snags with the worsened erosion and some of the design components that just weren't, once they got there on site, they just weren't going to work the way that they we thought that they would. And our operations group was very concerned about how they were going to maintain this facility. And with it being in the pandemic, we just felt that we were not really ready to take this further, and we actually terminated the construction contract. So we're $20 million in. Actually, we're about $10 million in, but with all the back payments for the delays to the contractor and the salvaging of parts, it will be about $19 million total, but we felt that was better than continuing and spending probably $40 or $50 million on a project that may not even work, and to have this continued bank erosion. So we made a very bold decision to cut our losses, terminate the contract, and now we're taking a step back, doing significant geotech work to better understand this erosion. We do have quite a bit of geotech coming into this, so we're taking a second fresh look and making sure we do bank improvements that are required before we even get into a construction project. So you'll see this again in the future. It represents a pretty big chunk of water supply. We're not giving up on it, but we want to go back and do a better job this time.
That's a tough decision to make. Where does the money go then? Because it's expended to date, 31.9, right, against forecasted at 49.
Yeah.
Does that somehow go, where does it go?
Well, it's all paid out.
It's gone.
It's gone. But, you know, so remaining in the budget, we of the original WSIP money, we have the 44 minus 32 is 12 million. We're adding, and I neglected to share that. So we're adding 5 million as part of our 10-year capital plan. And so you will see that as a line item. There's a project in there, Alameda Creek Recapture. It's only 5 million. We decided, we don't know what the future project, it could be 80 million. But we decided to just put 5 million in to represent the planning to get us a little further along. We're also rebalancing the entire WSIP now that we're at the end. We've managed to squeeze out about another 10 million from other projects being closed out. So we are going into this with about 20 million in this project that will get us pretty far along, and we probably won't have to ask for more money until the next budget cycle. So, but we're reimagining.
It is a
pretty big chunk of water supply, and this is a low cost compared to the other alternative water supply projects that are in our capital plan, that are water purification projects, even the recycled water projects, a much higher cost per gallon of water than this one. So we're not giving up on this one, and it also represents very early California water rights on the Calaveras system. that we don't want to give up those water rights, especially that we, since we have all the environmental approvals in place. So this is good for the steelhead, but also good for our ratepayers. But we want to do it right. And then the last project is the groundwater project. This is the Regional Groundwater Storage and Recovery. This is a joint project with three other agencies in our along the peninsula. It's Cal Water, Daly City, and San Bruno. And we partnered with them to do a like a water sharing of the Westside Groundwater Basin, where in wet years we'll all agree to not use our wells and take the Hetch Hetchy water and the regional water, and then in the dry years and we'll allow the basin to recharge. But in the dry years, then we'll draw from the groundwater wells more and not rely so much on the surface water. So really good agreement in on paper. Now we've got this project almost completed. We installed 13 wells. Two will go to Daly City, two will go to Cal Water. The other 9 stay with us. But we are not even going to operate. There were some issues with the wells. It took us a long time to get these constructed. There's a long tail on this. And even over the duration of this project, was taken about 20 years. Water quality issues have cropped up in the basin, where we are seeing different contaminants of concern in the basin, that now we will have to do treatment at some of these wells. So it's not slammed up.
Hi, did you use up all of our healthcare, what was it, the FSA money last year?
Did we go over our time?
Somebody connected is not muted. Looks like they caught it.
Okay, good. So this, again, is ending in 2027. And, our next phase is getting these wells into the ones that we can operate into service, getting our staff used to running them. But there is a follow-up project. This is about $37 million in the 10-year capital plan for treatment facilities. And so that will be the next step of this. And agencies all over the country are dealing with treatment facilities for groundwater basins because over time, first off, our testing is better, but also we've polluted a lot of our groundwater supplies, which is unfortunate. So still a very promising water supply project, but something that took additional funding that we weren't anticipating when we started the project. And that is it, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for that presentation.
Sorry, I think I went really long.
It's okay. It's all important information, and it's good for us to have a comprehensive, view of all the various projects going on from here all the way to Hetch Hetchy. Any questions or comments from the group?
No, I appreciate the overview. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
One question. You mentioned recycled water, I presume, and we actually, I don't think any of the rest of us here, but a few of us toured the Oceanside treatment plant about a year and a half ago and saw where that was being, I think at that time it was still in the testing phase, but was going to be operational soon. Mm-hmm. And my understanding, I think, was that it was intended to be used for, I don't know if it was the Sunset Boulevard median up to Golden Gate Park. Do you have any additional information about that? And you did mention recycled water is typically more expensive on a per gallon basis than some of these other water supplies.
Yes. Steve Ritchie told the Capital Planning Committee yesterday, we need to have these alternative water supply projects kind of in our quiver. We don't know what the future, right now our demands in San Francisco are lower than they've ever been. So even with future growth, we think that the demand is going to hold pretty steady, but we don't know, especially for our regional customers. We can't control their growth and we don't know. So we bring on these alternative water supplies both on a resiliency basis to have, more arrows in the quiver, but also to plan ahead for what the future may hold, both with our demand projections as well as future regulatory requirements. The state is proposing a higher proportion of water to stay in the Tuolumne River, which would mean less water for us to be able to take in drought years, which could result in some pretty serious rationing to our customers. So having these alternative water supplies helps balance that out, the drought planning as well. The recycled water project in conjunction with San Francisco groundwater wells is a brilliant opportunity. Golden Gate Park, you've seen the windmills down at the shore that was all designed to pump groundwater up to Still Lake, which flows by gravity and irrigates the entire park. It's a wonderful design, but those facilities, you know, are 100 years old. There's new groundwater pumps. They don't use the windmills anymore. But even those groundwater pumps are, you know, 20, 30 years old. So we have upgraded and replaced. We put in 7 new groundwater wells throughout San Francisco, and that will irrigate, the groundwater is replacing the wells that Rec Park had for irrigation. But once we have the recycled water treatment facility online, the recycled water facility will irrigate Golden Gate Park. And the water that used to irrigate Golden Gate Park from the groundwater wells will go to our drinking water system. So we will drink the groundwater and use recycled water on the plants, which is a great trade-off because our basins here in San Francisco are actually really pristine and very accessible. So we have most of those wells in service now, but they're being used for irrigation because we don't yet have the recycled water facility done. The recycled water facility is at Oceanside Plant, as you said, and you toured it. We ran into some problems with that project. It should have been completed, but it's a very corrosive environment out there. And we had some design issues with not providing enough air circulation in some of our cabinets, and some of the components actually corroded.
At the plant itself.
Oh. A brand new plant. We haven't even run it yet. Part of this is due to a lot of delays that are both city delays and contractor delays. It's a very complicated, it's a $200 million project, very complicated facility in a very tight space. So over that time, if the plant had been running, it probably would have been ventilated enough to not see this corrosion, but there were some design errors as well. We have now put a new project we've added to the recycled water project in our CIP. You'll see it's about $18 million additional. And because of the supply chain issues, how long it's taking to get electrical components, we're extending the closeout by 2 years. We think we'll have all those components in place in a year, be able to do the repairs, get everything up and running, and within 2 years we'll have it. But it was supposed to be done, so it's just extremely disappointing.
Yeah.
So all of our staff and our stakeholders as well, we had hoped to make that changeover. We have the groundwater wells ready to go. Everything else is ready, but
we have the pipeline in place to get the water up to Golden Gate Park.
We do. All the pipelines are in place. I'm not sure about the median. I think the Sunset Boulevard median was added in a little later. I think we've got that piping. I think we've got that in a contract that was just awarded. I know that the contract that was just awarded also gets recycled water to the zoo.
Okay.
So the zoo will start using recycled water for a lot of their facilities, like the water, the irrigation and that type of thing. They're also on a groundwater well. So that will keep that groundwater in the basin for us to use for drinking water.
Okay.
Complicated, but I tried to simplify it, make it easy to understand.
Right. Question? Other questions from the group? Okay, I think we can go to public comment on this time. If there's any members of the public who'd wish to speak about the Water Capital Programs update, please use the raised hand feature and we will call on you.
Delaying for just a moment to see if we have anyone who wants to speak on this item. Actually, let me make sure that we're saying this directly into the microphone.
Yeah.
If you have public comment on this discussion, please raise your hand inside Teams now, and we'll get to you in order. If you, in the order that you indicate your preference to speak, it looks like we don't have any speakers.
Okay, seeing none, public comment is closed. And, oh, yes.
Yeah, can I make a final remark? Nikolai just brought to my attention that I may have misspoke about the funding for the emergency firefighting water supply. Oh. I just want to clarify that the majority of the projects for that are funded by the ESER bonds, which is the earthquake safety and emergency response bonds that are overseen by the GO funds, the general obligation bond by the capital planning group. Just in case.
Very familiar with that project.
Yes, thank you.
And I think it's the West Side Phase 1 of that is.
Yeah,
it's on schedule.
Yeah, so far it's on schedule.
In my work with the budget analyst office, I was involved in a report and worked with some of your colleagues about the status of that project. That was a couple of years ago.
Revised schedule.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. And I'm happy to take any of your questions anytime. You guys can just shoot me an email.
Yeah.
You know, happy to follow up with any of you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for sending this presentation out. There's I'm sure a lot of information. In here, we can digest over the coming days and weeks. Thank you for coming and being available to provide this information. Okay, so we will move on now to item number 5, which is future site visits.
Members of RBOC will discuss potential future site visits to SFPUC projects funded by revenue bond proceeds related to the repair replacement, upgrade and expansion of SFPUC's water, power, and sewer infrastructure, including a potential site visit to the Southeastern Treatment Plant in May of 2024. The discussion and potential action item will be taking public comments as part of the discussion.
Okay, thank you. At our previous meeting, we had discussed members having interest in site visits, including in particular the Southeast Treatment Plant. There's been a lot of work that has gone on over there over the past several years, and probably a lot of interesting infrastructure and capital projects to see. Mr. Sklaroff had worked with the project team at Southeast Treatment Plant and had suggested a date that I believe was May 10th for a site visit. It was suggested logistically that it would be better if it were not done as an agendized public meeting due to, safety issues, still some active construction going on there. And for that, the attendance would be limited to 3 members so that there would not be a quorum of RBOC present. Are there members available? Does that date work for members of RBOC?
Yeah, so sorry, maybe cut number if I copied you on this email, maybe I neglected to. I think everyone can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to sit it out if you want to go. I think you're the only one who's been, but to your point, it's been a couple of years.
I'd be happy to sit it out if you're able to attend. And I think it was also, mentioned that, and I asked Mr. Sklaroff, that there are other groups that tour the Southeast Treatment Plant as well. It wouldn't, this isn't just a one-off thing for RBOC. I know in the past, someone had reached out to me because I missed the previous tour and asked, if I would like to join on another tour that was happening. I'd be happy to sit this one out and as long as we're notified about other potential tours, and I'm sure Member Camp would be interested in attending as well once he returns.
Yeah, and I think DC Ortega was interested in going.
Yeah, I would be happy to attend, and that way we can also preserve any Brown Act protections, so we ensure that this is not a public meeting, so we can navigate. If there's only 3 people, we're not discussing any RBOC business, we can navigate that together with the group that goes. And then if we wanted to do a second tour, I would also be happy to attend that one, just to make sure, again, that nothing that is discussed or, anything that goes on there is not RBOC business.
Sure. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Mr. Sklaroff.
So just very briefly, at your request, Chair Heller, the project team is going to flag other tours, and the other remaining members don't need to do it together. They can select whichever of those dates work.
Okay. And I think it's about a three-hour tour, so pretty significant amount that you'll be seeing over there. So good to see it all.
One more question. I have an intern in the city attorney's office that has not had an opportunity to do the full tour. Would Arbat be comfortable with me bringing her to the tour with the three members?
Yeah,
great. Thank you.
Yeah, I think in previous tours we have not had members from the city attorney's office present, but right. You're certainly welcome to attend and bring your colleagues as well. So I think we will put that on the calendar then for May 10th, and staff will follow up with the three of you about logistics for and details for that meeting, for that tour. Not a meeting.
Not a serial meeting.
For the tour of ARBOC, of the three ARBOC members. Okay, if there are members of the public who are interested in speaking, we'll open public comment, and please use the raised hand feature, and we will call on you.
Delaying for just a moment to see if we have any speakers who want to give public comments on this discussion about a potential future site visit on May 10th. And Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing that we have any speakers.
Okay, so seeing none, public comment is closed. And I don't think we have to take any formal action on this, so we will move on now to item number 6, the approval of the March 12th, 2024 meeting minutes.
This is a discussion and potential action item. We'll be taking public comment as part of the discussion. Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any comments from the members about the meeting minutes?
No. Review, they look. Accurate. Thank you, the clerk.
Okay. Seeing no comments.
Sorry, yeah. I have a random comment.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, how come? It's just a question, really. When you have, there's only four members, right? And when you put the eyes, you put five.
Thank you. I can make that. I work from a template where I erase their names, and I just didn't update the number there. Thank you for catching that.
I think I'm both 6 and 7.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll change that.
Thank you for catching that.
I will make a clerical correction to the votes to make sure that the numerals and the listed names match.
Okay. All right, let's open this up now for public comment.
Do we have any callers who have public comment in the form of the minutes? If so, raise your hand inside Teams. And Mr. Chair, it appears we have no speakers.
Okay, with no comments. We will take that correction on the number of aye votes, items 6 and 7. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
I second.
Okay. Motion by Vice Chair Luthy and second by Member Wieser. Can I have a roll call vote, please?
On that motion, Member Leung.
Yes.
Leung, aye. Member Luthy.
Aye.
Luthy, aye. Member Wieser.
Aye.
Wieser, aye. Member Holober.
Aye.
Holober, aye. Mr. Chair, there are four ayes.
Thank you for that.
And one absence with Member Camp absent.
Okay. All right, so we will now move to item 7, announcements, comments, questions, and future agenda items. Any of those four options from any of the members? I had one brief comment, and this is about sort of an outstanding future agenda item E, which we brought up at the last meeting, and there was some back and forth offline about whether that should be on the agenda today or not, the discussion of finding two of the SFPUC performance audit, selected revenue bond over expenditures dated December 23rd, 2021. A couple of new members who are not here. Member Vice Chair Vithi, were you on the committee in 2021?
No.
No. Okay.
But is this from the first audit?
This would be, I think that would be audit two of the three audit series that we're on.
I think that's right.
And we have an annual update. Like, does it remind you, right, an annual update on whether or not finding two has been continued to be addressed or something like that?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, my memory of the tracking of this is that I added this in the springtime last year after this body had a discussion at a regularly scheduled meeting.
Mm-hmm.
There was a request at the time for a potential follow-up.
Okay.
So it's been tracked
since
that time.
So
if you want to remove it, by all
means.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that 2015 lessons learned has been on here for
same with that.
For years.
Happy to remove both of them in your direction.
I think maybe I'm just thinking here, you know, that was a report issued in December 2021. There was a presentation in the spring of 2023. I assume there was some presentation after the report was issued and then some type of follow-up a year ago. So I'm not sure why that is still on the list. Maybe we can wait for Member Camp to return to see if he has any recollection of that.
I have some notes on it in my notes, so I'm not going to be able to put it all together right now, but I can maybe look for next meeting and kind of recollect what it was. It sounded like from my first notes here from the December 23 meeting. This is about the rate difference, you might remember, between DPW and FSPC. They have a higher overhead. It's like built into the rate. Do you remember that discussion?
Yes.
The implications for PUC are significant because DPW essentially does more work for PUC than it does for itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it's a primary sort of work, I guess, for the in-city PUC work. This is when we started talking about the COSO framework, if you recall. Anyway, I can look through our notes and figure out.
Yeah.
I think we just wanted to, like, check in on it, but I can't remember exactly what we wanted to.
Yeah.
And the RBOC committee did recently hear a presentation with more details about the COSO framework, which is certainly in 2024.
These notes I'm looking at are from December. I think Nancy Helm came and presented. We're only in April, so one of the last three meetings. Mm-hmm. And actually, January we didn't meet, so it's very much.
Yeah.
We were both here in February.
Yeah, do you remember when Nancy Helm was with us?
No.
Okay.
Okay. So just another aside here. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the RBOC website. And I only see one of the two audits posted on the website. This was the one from December 23, 2021. So now that I think about it, maybe that was audit one of the three audit series. Because I'm thinking
the report was published in 21 then.
Yeah, because I'm thinking audit two was
when I
published more recently within, you know, about maybe 2023 or so.
I joined in the middle of 22 and I think we were on audit.
I know that audit two is posted on the controller's website. I'll check with Benito Capuyan and SFPUC staff to get that posted secondarily as well on the RBOC page on the SF Water website.
Okay.
But I know that it is up.
Yeah, so I think this is a different finding, Ben. This isn't related to the public works.
Okay.
Because I believe that was from audit two. So.
Hunter Wong, do you have? I noticed that Hunter Wong has turned his camera on.
We did post both of the audit reports on our website. So the first one is dated, we released it February 15th, 2022. And then the phase two we released in September of 2023.
Okay.
We'll make sure that the RBOC page matches and has both of them duplicatively posted as well.
Yeah, so this, just for reference, the finding that was noted in this agenda item is that the quality assurance audit function was not operational from June 2017 through November 2020. So I know this isn't on the agenda today. This is discussing it as a potential future agenda item. I don't know if that's something we necessarily need to revisit. Sounds like kind of, you know, I don't want to say ancient history, but something that perhaps we have moved on from.
Did we want to get an update on whether or not the quality assurance function was not functional, perhaps? Again, so I wasn't, if it's from audit one, I wasn't around.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's, I mean, if we added this only a year ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think one other, yeah, one other thing, maybe mm-hmm. if this was presented a year ago, is there some type of, I don't know if it was just a verbal presentation or if there was some type of a PowerPoint
that we can look at
and
we can look at it offline as part of our agenda prep for
okay.
the future.
Okay. Yeah, and we can also check with.
We have these things tracked.
Yeah.
Yep, and we can check with member of camp when he returns as well to see if he has recollection.
Later this month.
So hopefully by the next meeting he will be here. Okay. Any other comments about the? Oh, and also I think was. Potentially we'll have presentations on both the wastewater and on power enterprise at the next meeting on capital programs. So that will give the two new members a pretty quick recap of everything going on over the course of today and our next meeting. So hopefully that will help, you know, inform discussions about, you know, if they're going to do some type of other audit of some sort, evaluating, acquiring a consultant to examine, I guess it wouldn't be performance of completed projects, but help generate ideas of potential other projects that ARBOC could initiate that are within the outlined ARBOC scope. Okay, let's move to public comment if any members of the public would like to speak on this item.
Do we have anyone who has public comment on this discussion of announcements, questions, comments, and future agenda items? If so, please raise your hand at this time. And Mr. Chair, it appears we have no speakers.
Okay. Public comment on this item is closed. Last call from the group. No. Okay, we will go ahead and adjourn the meeting, and we will see you all back on May 14th. And I guess you'll have the tour. The three of you will be attending the tour before that, so hope to hear all about it. Okay.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.